This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 649, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 649. I'm Josh Flanagan. This is my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi, Josh.
Who has been rescheduled at the last minute by me.
That's okay.
It's nighttime. We never do this at night anymore.
It's night. I do feel more awake and lucid. However, doing it at home, I'm doing it in the hot box. So It's worse than my office.
I do not feel more awake, and I certainly do not feel more lucid. So I think you're going to miss maybe a different kind of flavor show tonight.
On the other hand, I just had dinner, So I might fall asleep.
As long as there's not...
That's where I am in my life.
You know, you're not talking, and you go, anyway, the thing is... We are iFanboy. We talk about digestion and comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, or in some glorious, glorious weeks... Just a smattering of comics. And
it's
one
a fifth
of us.
Week.
Oh, like a proper fifth week. Not a, here's 100 annuals. Just like, I don't know, here. It's fifth
well,
week.
I mean, this is basically an all Marvel DC show because basically everyone else took a nap.
Good for them. Everybody needed time.
They don't have to all come out all the time.
One of us picks the favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about almost every other book from the week. And we'll talk about the patron pick. And maybe we'll get out of here before an hour and a half goes by. It should be fun. There will be spoilers. You've been warned. We're going to talk about what happens in the books. That's your problem. Connor, you had the pick of the week.
Yeah, and I didn't want it to be this book.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, before I read it, it's Lex Luthor / Porky Pig special number one, and I just didn't... I didn't want it to be this one. Written by Mark Russell, art by Brad Walker, Andrew Dollhouse in colors, Troy and Dave... The cool dude lettering team. I heard some chatter about it. You know, I was looking forward to it because Mark Russell did a really good job on the Flintstones. Obviously, it's one of my favorite books. And I was like, I don't want it to be Porky Pig. I don't want to encourage this behavior.
Expand on that specifically.
I just don't. The Flintstones book was great. We eventually ended up enjoying the. The other one, the cat one.
I thought you were with it and lucid.
Snagglepuss. And, but the crossover books, I wasn't into the last round so much. Uh-huh. And I don't know.
So you don't want to encourage more of this genre. And you certainly don't want to get the genius Mark Russell pigeonholed here.
I also don't want to encourage any more of these covers with the pig face.
I don't even think I noticed the cover.
Look at the face of the pig, of Porky Pig.
Okay, I'm going to it.
Ben Oliver's cover. And
It's looking into my soul.
Okay, yeah, you don't want that.
It's creepy. Anyway, it ended up being this book by like a wide margin.
Uh-huh.
So I finished my books and I was like, all right, God damn it, it's the pig book. So here we have.
Did you read the others from this week?
No, just this one.
Okay, yeah, me neither.
It's Mark Russell.
Right.
So this is this week DC put out a bunch of crossovers with Looney Tunes. So there was a Joker and a Daffy Duck or something, you know, that kind of thing. So this one is Lex Luthor, Porky Pig. And what I loved about this is that it felt very much like the Flintstones in that this allowed Mark Russell to make many trenchant observations on the state of humanity, mm-hmm. which seems to be what he excels at. And so Porky Pig opens the book and he's successful. He's got his cryptocurrency company doing really well. And it's the darling of Wall Street, and all within one page, it collapses and he's out on the street living in a one room occupancy, looks like, and he's nothing. And he ends up waitering at the place he'd been eating, the fancy restaurant he'd been eating in the beginning. And he's serving Lex Luthor, who recognizes him and hires him to run social media at LexCorp. And we get to see some observations on social media and some observations on the nature of business. And this is a goofier Lex Luthor than you're used to, although no less conniving.
Yeah, and I had my moment where I was like, is this all right? And then I thought, of course it's all right. There's Porky Pig in this book.
Daffy? Who is this? Daffy Duck?
Yeah.
Is trolling Lex on basically Lex's version of Twitter.
I feel like that's actually the most in-character thing if that were to happen. I was like, I buy that 100%. He just doesn't go near social media, but if he did, it would upset him.
Right. So even Lex Luthor is brought low. All the while, there is a subplot about someone stealing sandwiches from the LexCorp employee refrigerator, which has become Porky Pig's domain to solve. And there's a bit of commentary on illegal aliens being scapegoats and a really great panel where it's finally revealed that it's Lex stealing the sandwiches. So of course, it's Lex, and he's giving the thumbs up as he walks by eating the sandwich. This just felt... You know, there was something Mark Russell did lately that we didn't really love. Was it a Superman story?
He did a Superman. He did a Superman Lex Luthor thing in one of those. It was this like Lex Luthor is president. Right. In one of those anthologies.
Like the Trumpian.
Yes.
Situation. That was a little on the nose. This is what he excels at. He's really good with high concepts. The whole extended metaphor for the herd of buffalo was really spot on. It's just, you know, he writes about things that you don't necessarily want to read.
Yeah.
But they're really good. I mean, he's got great observations about the world. He's a really good satirist.
And having Dr. Sivan. Savano and Ivo, like, as basically medical research CEOs.
Right.
Like they're genius supervillains, but they're the ones who are in charge of the you know, big pharma in this world. And I was like, that works really well. That's really good.
And really great Brad Walker art.
Yeah, shot of him in that sort of bedsit, that single room occupancy when he's on the bed all curled up in the fetal position. I was like, that's an effective image of a sad pig.
And they managed to pull off making the pig seem normal for the world, but also never lose sight of its pigness.
Yeah, you know, in a way that the cover didn't.
No, the cover is disturbing.
The cover is not, doesn't make you think of Porky Pig at all. Like, it's a different thing. There was that other version of Porky Pig, though. Remember the earlier one that was kind of fatter and more uncomfortable looking?
Yeah.
So maybe it was a little more like that. The problem, I'm going off topic slightly. The problem with the cover here is that Lex, again, we've talked about all those boots, he's not wearing those. That's not a boot that Lex is wearing.
Well, the Soho boots, are those what they're called?
I forget what, I want to say Chelsea boots, but I don't think
Chelsea
that's
boots,
what it is.
Chelsea boots, that's it. Is I knew that it was it? A neighborhood in
And he's wearing the Joker's suit. How do you feel again, this is off topic. How do you feel about that way of portraying Plaid
in comics? Oh, just having it. I mean,
I like it.
Might be the easiest way.
I like it for the tradition of it, but I don't like it for the laziness of it.
I don't know if it's lazy. It's just that it's easy. And then that is laziness. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, but also like it's a thing that I've seen in comics my entire life. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of indicative of the form, which I like.
One more observation with the cover is that this Porky Pig is as tall as Lex.
Yes, he is.
Which might be doubly disturbing.
Also, if I may say, that is a fantastic rendering of an old-timey barber chair.
It is. I also really like the idea that, and we're just going to keep talking about the cover, is that the one sock doesn't go quite all the way up.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's a fine... there's a lot to look at here that's good. Although the pig faces, I wish you had never brought that up. I have to sleep.
Good luck sleeping tonight.
You've got 3 hours on me.
But I just had Chinese food, so I might only have 20 minutes. So, also, Mark Russell has a really nice ear for Porky Pig's dialogue.
Yep, that's true.
It was really impressive. When do you put in the stutter? When do you put in the way he changes his phrasing to get past the stutter, as many as stutterers have to do, you know, not doing it too often.
I also thought
it was really effective.
Yeah, he was. And he also did the thing where, like, I hadn't thought about how Porky Pig sounded in forever. And, like, when I read the dialogue, I was like, oh, that's it. Like, it was, I could hear it exactly. And then there's the bit later where he's trying to say, you know, he's trying to say a word and he repeats it twice and he can't get it. And then he changes it to a synonym.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, right, that. And it really kind of brought me back in a way. Yeah, you're totally right.
Nice to hear for that. So this is, I mean, it's just a very well constructed story. You know, there's some stuff about clinging to your guns when you feel unsafe when your sandwiches is being stolen. And then there's the fact that Lex is basically using him as a pawn the entire time. It all folds in on itself at the end, like a nicely done Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. And it really fit in the space.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the one issue.
It must be, you've interviewed him. It must be hard to be Mark Russell.
Well, I did interview him, and what was interesting about it is that, like, it didn't seem like it was all, like, it seemed like it was very natural to him. Meaning, like, you know, when you ask somebody to, like, analyze their work or talk about how they think about it, I wasn't getting that from him. Because, for one thing, he wasn't so far into comics at that point. When you talk about... I talked about this with Jeff Parker in my recent talk exploded with him because we were mentioning how that Flintstone book was like literally the best thing that came out that year. Yeah. And then the real shocker of it was like he didn't know how to write comics.
Right.
And to nail something as to me like a satirical comic book that is about this many issues in a short format, you know, short form format. Single issue, you've got 20 pages, or not? I don't even know if he had
40
that much.
Here.
Yeah,
it's like two issues worth.
Yeah, either way, a lot of stuff. There weren't dead spots. There were points. He was satirizing characters who we're familiar with, but also working with. Like it was a lot of things moving around, and it felt effortless. And usually it takes people a lot longer than that. And I'm talking about people who, you know, we've seen this a million times where people who are very skilled in writing for other formats and other media will come in and they just can't do it. And this is just effortless.
And satire is often the hardest thing because it can get really broad really quickly, especially when your main character is Porky Pig.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't happen. It's never happened with any of the stuff I've seen him do. It didn't happen in the Flintstones. It didn't happen with Snagglepuss, and it doesn't happen here. He has that tone down perfectly. Yeah. And I don't want, you know, you don't want a guy to get pigeonholed as the cartoon writer, but every time they put him on one of these stories, he knocks it out of the park.
Yeah. I mean, for us, I don't know.
Yeah. All I can speak for is myself.
Yeah, it's true. That's
and the
true.
Show. I mean, I finished it. I was like, Jesus.
Yeah,
this is it. I mean, unless one of these other books knocks, you know, blows me away. And there's some other good ones I read afterwards, but you know, this was like an easy pick.
And also in all of those instances, and I'm going to give credit to whoever his editors are. He's had really perfect collaborators. I mean, Steve Pugh on the Flintstones, whoever it was on Snagglepuss, I'm sorry. But like that was good. And in this one, like Brad Walker, I'm really, really did a stellar
job. Doing a slightly different style than you see him doing in superhero books.
Yeah. But there's a lot of characters in here. There's a lot of... These are great pages. Really dynamic sort of overacting on Lex and like having that, like the facial expressions and really wonderful cartooning in here.
Yeah. It was a solid book with... Yep. Very enjoyable. If they have to keep doing these crossovers, then that's fine. Also, this week is part two of Extermination. It's wrong in the script, but it's part two of Extermination number two. Ed Brisson, Pepe Larraz, Marte Garcia, and Joe Sabino. And I talked to Ron on our hangout that you missed, our Patreon hangout.
Is this a virtual review?
No, he loved this. He's loving this as our resident old X-Men co-host. And I am as well. Pepe Larraz is really, really good. One of the few exciting new artists to come around in a while. And now that we have the revelation that young Cable is the bad guy, at least seems to be the bad guy in all this, he's now free to wreak havoc, and which he does here. So what happens is that the plan is. Or is that the other? That's the next book. I'm sorry. I'm sweating like crazy. Sorry. There's another X-Men book we're talking about in a second. That was also good. But he's taking out, as we discussed before, the young X-Men. Mm-hmm. And so he's attacking them. And in this issue, Angel gets kidnapped to a dastardly fate, which I won't spoil. But it's just really good X-Men stuff. They all meet in the mansion, and they're going to break up into four teams to investigate. It's just classic X-Men stuff, and at the end, Old Man Logan is possessed with something, and he's now in trouble. So this feels like a real nice deck cleaning. I know I talked about it before, but the art is really, really terrific, and Ed Brisson, I haven't read a ton of stuff from, is doing a really good job with these characters.
I've read some things here and there, and he's been around a while, so he's got it sometimes. I haven't loved everything, but he's definitely a pretty good writer.
And so this is every 2 weeks, and here we have the advent of, since Cable was killed last time, his old team, Domino and Shatterstar and all those Cannonball show up to get angry. And so they're on the cover of the next issue, so I assume that's going to be the focus of the next one. But this is just a fun X-Men book. It doesn't require a lot of foreknowledge. All you have to know is that the young X-Men have been around, and you can jump right into it. So... Now, I don't remember. You did read some of those Hunt for Wolverine books.
No. I think I read.
Did you read the one with Iron Man and Spider-Man?
I think I read the first one the first week.
And they went into the submarine?
Maybe I did. I guess that sounds familiar.
There were four or five miniseries, Hunt for Wolverine miniseries, that predictably went nowhere at the end. And I stopped reading. I tried all the first issues. I dropped one immediately, and then I read all of them to various lengths. I don't think I finished any of them but that one with – no, I finished the Daredevil one, the Daredevil and the Inhumans one, and I finished the New Avengers one. But this is Hunt for Wolverine Dead Ends, technically number one, but it's just a one-shot, which wraps up all those miniseries and then moves on to the next miniseries. Listen, I realize I'm part of the problem.
Uh-huh.
And I realize I'm encouraging this behavior. It's particularly egregious and ridiculous in this case. The Return of Wolverine is not – no one's talking about it. It's not that big of a deal that it's requiring like 25 books. But
is this the Return of Wolverine following, I guess, Charles Soule's killing of Wolverine, which would have been several years ago now?
Yes. Yeah, so that one, okay. Wolverine who – was covered in liquid adamantium, turned into a statue.
Right.
The quote unquote real Wolverine. Then he got replaced by Old Man Logan, who's still around.
Right. Oh, because God forbid they give something up.
Right. So this is Charles Soule and Ramon Rosanas on art. And here, someone is. Oh, so we talked about it where in that miniseries with the New Avengers, they found a database of all the humans on Earth.
Mm hmm.
And Mr. Sinister had it, and someone had stolen a copy of it before they destroyed it. Well, here the stolen copy has shown up, and so whoever has it has been able to figure out who all of the mutants are going to be, the people who have the mutant gene but haven't sprouted yet, like the kids.
Uh-huh.
and they're going around and taking them all out so that there won't be no more mutants born. And while Tony and Matt Murdock and Kitty Pryde are having their let's gather all the clues discussion, all these young mutants are being taken out around the world. And then at the end, they get attacked at their thing again, and the villain is revealed, but we don't know who it is. It's just some popo I've never seen before who says, basically, I'm taking out all the mutants, and see ya. So it's basically just a wrap-up to the miniseries, and then to be continued in Return of Wolverine, number one.
Uh-huh.
Even though no one really cares.
I mean, someone might. I don't know who it is, but... So I bet someone's buying it. Are you having fun with it?
I'm having fun with it. It was really fun to be with the New Avengers, and it was fun. I like the Daredevil book with that cop, that Inhuman cop, and Misty Knight.
Okay.
And the other
read that. I feel like I read that.
Whatever.
Like it I didn't mean, stick with me enough that I kept reading right. It. Apparently.
But. It'll be good to have Wolverine back.
Mm-hmm.
And if it takes 45 comics to do it, then so be it.
Yeah.
That's what Marvel wants to do. That's what Marvel's doing. So now, I was very confused, Joshua. Because Fantastic Four number one came out. And here we got Marvel 2-in-1 number 9, in which Johnny and Ben are still on that alternate world with no powers, and this is clearly behind schedule.
Yeah, and it's I was gonna say it's better, but it's good still. And I know that this isn't how comics work, but I just wish they'd just let this play out first, because it really sucked the air out of what for me has been a highlight of a miniseries for me.
Yeah. Yes. I didn't love the art. It's Ramon Perez, one of our favorites. Chip Zdarsky's writing it, but I thought it was like a very rushed Ramon Perez.
I don't know that it's rushed. I think that his style changes on each project. I mean, this is kind of what it's looked like for a while, but, and in fact, I see what you're saying, but I feel like that's almost more in the finishing of stuff, but this is kind of
it seemed
what
like a very heavy
like a
ink
while.
On it, a heavy ink line.
Yeah.
I mean, not bad. It just wasn't. Yeah. And I saw another...
I see what you're saying.
He did another book that I saw. It was a trade paperback and something like a adaption of Jane Austen or something. And it looked like classic Ramon Perez. So I saw this one. I was like, ooh, what happened?
Mm.
But...
well, yeah. Maybe that's the case. But, he had to go on a vintage motorcycle cross-country.
Right. Those Vespas aren't going to ride themselves.
In a crisp, perfect leather jacket. that being said... I the characterization that's happening here between Johnny and Ben has just been exemplary through this whole thing, and I like that we are slowly and methodically working through something with them, which should be paying off when you get to the Dan Slott series, but it won't for two reasons. One, it's not done, so Dan Slott can't be working off it, and two, Dan Slott is not this subtle.
Right.
And so this is a little more my speed. I don't know. It's funny because I know that.
It's interesting you're calling Chip Zdarsky subtle because in the past you have not.
I haven't. And I think that's one of the things that actually makes this so enjoyable is that you're like, well, look at this guy do this. I mean, who saw that coming? This is a dumb joke guy in the past, but I love seeing that other side of him. And I'm excited to give somebody credit to do that. And there is really, there's a couple of sequences in here. There's a truck crash. Mm-hmm. Truck blows up, flips over. I really like that page as a sequential page.
Great page. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what follows it, there's a couple of really sort of quiet panels and moments is basically we're just watching the camera zoom in. And we get to the reveal at the end, which is Sue Storm. I don't know which one, but... it doesn't matter. Just a lot. There's just a lot to like here, and it's much more my speed. And to be fair, it probably wouldn't make a great Fantastic Four book, but as a sort of ancillary side Fantastic Four thing to get us back into it. Like, I'd rather read something like this than 56 Return of the Fantastic Four series.
You sure?
Like they're doing with the Return of Wolverine. You know, it's
Hunt for the Fantastic Four?
Yeah.
Which is basically what this book has been.
I know, but I mean, you want to talk about nobody caring or being under the radar. I just feel like, you know.
I just find it very interesting, whatever they're doing. Like, we're on issue 9, and if everything is written for the trade, then you surmise maybe they're going 12?
It could be 10, could be 5 and 5, could be one big 10, could be 6 and 6.
Could be 10, but it puts it at least 2 issues into the Fantastic Four run, which is an odd. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is.
Yep. I mean, I still feel, you know, I'm happy we're getting it as a thing. I'm happy I found it. It's still almost surprising me that I read it to begin with. So, I'll take it. I'll take not quite on model Ramon Perez over a lot of guys.
Sure. No, it's still great storytelling. That truck page is terrific.
Yeah.
Moon Knight 198, which is apparently two issues from the finale. I think I read that.
Really?
It's ending at 200. Or at the very least, Max Bemis's run is over. Whether that means the book is over or not is another question. But well, Max Bemis, or just the writer, Jason Burroughs on art. Max Bemis, also a new comics writer. And he's great. He's terrific.
Well, here's my question. This is a serious question here.
Yeah.
Does Marvel know they're doing this?
That's
because holy shit.
I had some similar thoughts. I was like, wow, okay, that is dark.
And when you just said that, I don't know what you're talking about because there are enough moments in here that would apply to that like, and I say that like people know I've been ambivalent about Moon Knight for a long time. And if you were to describe this to me, I wouldn't want to read it, but
so is this the best run of Moon Knight you've read?
I don't know if it's the best. It's
the most interesting, I think.
It's super interesting, both from a straight up sort of character standpoint of you know, like this exploration of the character, but also just as a comic book, it's interesting to me. There's a lot of unexpected things happening, and they're he's dealing with the dissociative disorder in a way that is interesting. And I have no problem, by the way, that when his personality switches, he gets a mustache or loses a mustache. I'm fine with that.
It's like Red Hulk.
Yep.
I just like the idea that, you know, Dan Buckley's like, I thought we were doing a Moon Knight book. And they're like, no, didn't happen.
I know, and it's funny that like we have this
problems, and then they like, they make all the stores around the offices, like, They buy them all off the shelves.
There's this super sensitive comic book audience out there, and everybody's boycotting or offended, or, you know, like, is this okay? Should we say this? And then this book is fucked up. And I haven't said that in a long time about a Marvel book. It's fucked up. He beats a dolphin to death over a period of...
Did he... I guess he beat it. Yeah, I guess
he
beat
it
to death. He definitely ate it. So... As we mentioned last issue, we met the Society of Sadists. That's not exactly the name, but that's basically what it is. Société de Sadiques.
Well, that's Society of Sadists in French.
Well, I wanted to give them their proper name.
Okay.
And at the end of that issue, Moon Knight showed up, and it was the guy, the Nazi from his past, who was running it.
I mean, like, I want to tell you in retrospect, that was fucked up. That was fucked up enough. Then they brought him back.
And so now he's... For some reason, Moon Knight's being put through the society's gauntlet for membership. So if you want to be part of the society, you really got to prove your sadism. You can't just, they're not just going to take your word for it. And so the first trial is man versus dolphin infected with rabies. And it's a dolphin in a giant tank in the middle of a room. And it lasts for, it's like 2 weeks, this trial. As Moon Knight waits out the water level on the tank until it evaporates to the point where the dolphin doesn't really have any room to swim.
That's what it was. He was waiting for the water to evaporate, because at one point he starts drinking the water, which would be salt water.
Was he? Oh, he was drinking it.
Yeah, he slurps, and then he pees.
That's not good.
Yeah. Again, I don't care.
So he...
I wanted the sequence of the 4-panel pages with the medium shot of the tank. Like, I was upset that was only 2 pages. I was like, please do this for like 6 pages. I want to see.
I don't think I realized just how much of the dolphin he ate. Basically the entire dolphin.
considerable amount of dolphin.
That's all
and,
blubber.
And that I panel mean... says rejoice.
So he passes the first trial, and then the second trial is a guy arrested for animal cruelty.
Like ironically,
animal cruelty.
He just ate a dolphin.
I know.
Where does he get off?
Beating the dolphin to death and eating it. And so this guy's like paper mache'd in place around all these paper mache'd animals, and all of his crimes are posted on the wall. And you're right. I don't think I realized the irony of him reading the crimes and getting upset enough to murder this guy with one of his moon talons mm-hmm. when he just killed a dolphin. But then again, dolphins are dicks, so. That was man versus inhumanity, the second trial. The third trial, man versus himself, in which he has to face Fool Killer, the dumbass superhero who is also a psychiatrist who psychoanalyzes him.
In costume.
And finds out he's really fucked up. It only takes 3 minutes.
Yeah, well, it's not hard to... I've been reading this long, and I can tell.
But the great thing about the third trial is afterwards you get a custom-made suit.
Well, what I like about the third trial is that he seems to walk in directly after that, and he's still in his, like, ripped up... It's the suit from the dolphin trial.
Dolphin bloody suit.
And also the blood of, like, extra blood from the guy. It's all over his feet and legs. So what happened between... Ugh.
Give him the man a shower. At some point he gets to put a new suit on, because the fourth trial, fun with Morpheus the Dream Eater, in which I guess Morpheus tries to put bad dreams in his head, and it's just like no big deal to him. Although his consciousnesses fight those dreams off in his head, and they're all bloodied and dressed like gladiators. Fifth trial, now he's in a purple suit. And it's just a battle royale, I guess. He's fighting a lot of them at once. Seems like not a big deal after the dolphin eating.
And then we get to the end when I really was like, really? You're going to do this? Okay.
And you explain the end one.
All right. So he's put into a, basically the Nazi gives him a choice. He says, okay, there's three choices you can make. One, you fight us all. And this may not be the correct order, but you fight us all. You can't win. We'll kill you. Second,
they kill your child.
Right, they kill your child. Or three, you accept it and you become like, you know, the head of the sadists. And then he goes into a room and he realizes what he's supposed to do is, I'll skip to the end. He has to kill a little girl, who's a little black girl, by the way.
Yeah.
And I was like, I hope this. I don't know. I feel like this isn't okay, and maybe she's a character we knew from before. He doesn't do it, but there's a moment where it seems like he's going to.
Well, he considers it his own daughter's at stake, because the darker edged personality, the Stephen Grant personality, says, "Don't be an asshole, kill her. She's our daughter's life's at stake." And so he takes over, grows the mustache, and it's like the scene in The Dark Knight where the obnoxious yuppie guy is going to press the button on the bomb but doesn't do it when he actually has to do it. And he drops the talon and rescues the girl. And then the sort of final shot is all of the sadists running at Moon Knight. He's clearly taking option one.
Right. That little girl's going to get hurt anyway.
On it.
I did see that. It says end.
I guess that means that's it for the story.
Well, they said we'll see you next month for 199 or Big Issue 200, so...
I mean, there's going to be two more comics. I just guess that's in for the arc, but maybe no one else read this, because I feel like in this day and age, someone would have complained about this issue.
I can't imagine.
The dolphin people.
It really was a thing. It was an experience.
I have to admit, I thought about making this book to pick.
I wouldn't have argued with you. I don't know that I would have agreed with you, but I wouldn't have argued. And if,
I thought about it. I was like, he ate that dolphin, the whole thing.
If I had a pick, I might have gone for it just for the audacity of it. Yeah. It's a thing. This has been if nothing else, this series has been super fun to talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Thank you, Max Bemis.
Yeah.
And whatever weird shit is going on in your head. Let's take a break real quick, talk about how you can help support iFanboy. If you're not visiting one of our many fine sponsors, you can go to patreon.com/ifanboy, and that is where you can sign up and do all kinds of things. Number one, you can vote on a comic to add to the rundown, the Patreon pick that's coming up later in the show. Number two, you get to hang out with us once a month at our monthly hangout, which we just did last week for August, which we talked about all kinds of things, and then we're going to have our G.I. Joe draft next month. And number three, you can get a superpower, which we'll be giving out later in the show. And then number four, you can just hang out in the community, the Facebook group. There's all kinds of things happening there. And you can help us get to our next stretch goal, which is a non-comics media podcast. And also, we're going to add another feature to that stretch goal. We just haven't voted on it yet. We have a proposal. So we'll get back to you on that. T-shirt store, ifanboy.threadless.com. That's where you can get a T-shirt. iFanboy logo, Herm, Pick of the Week podcast, ratings. If one is Electro, GDAT, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. You can get those designs on shirts or also on mugs or shower curtains or bath mats or iPhone cases. I don't know if you can get your car wrapped, but maybe that's a service they offer.
Do you think that our images have a high enough resolution to do that?
Probably not.
Okay.
This guy's car is really ugly. It's all pixely.
Yeah.
Ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out directly via PayPal. If you just want to give us a quick donation, you don't want to worry about being a patron, which is totally great. And ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can go find links to the books we talk about in the Booksplode, as well as a general Amazon link for all your shopping needs. And we thank everyone who helps us out on the show to keep the show going, really. You're the ones who keep us coming back every week, and we do appreciate it. So this half of the show, there's a lot of books, but I'm going to run through them real quick, a lot of my books. Batgirl Annual number 2, and this is – you made the annual joke earlier, but there was a bunch of annuals that came out. And I don't know what the strategy is with the annuals, because Batgirl Annual number 2 and Nightwing Annual number 1. We'll talk about Nightwing in a second. But this one was a standalone story, which I assume will – eventually tie into what's going on in the future of the book, because Margaret's – I hope that's how you say it.
I think that's just Margaret, but spelled Margaret, like Irish people do.
Margaret Scott is the writer here, and she's the new writer on Batgirl. And here it's a well-worn trope, but it's the one I enjoy, in which Batgirl goes to visit her brother. If you remember, James Gordon Jr. is a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in prison, Hannibal Lecter style.
Where did he come from originally?
Scott Snyder.
Okay, so he made him up. Like, that's where that came from.
Wasn't there a son in year one? And that's where
Yeah. Okay.
So he was never mentioned again, as far as I'm aware, and Scott Snyder brought him back to be the serial killer in Detective Comics when he was doing Detective Comics.
I kind of like that, and I kind of don't.
Yeah. So he's in prison, Hannibal Lecter style. Someone is out there committing copycat murders of his, something that he and Barbara share, and so she goes to get his advice, and he helps her figure it out, and it's dark, and it's fucked up, and it's actually really well done. Elena Casagrande is the artist. She's really good. It was just a nice look into the pathos between Barbara and James. I really like that relationship. She misses him as a brother. She has memories of them as kids. He was upset about the attention she got because she was the perfect one, but at the same time, he was also a psychopath, so it manifested in murder, and just a really fucked up serial killer story with these underlying familial tensions that Barbara has. She at one point ends up on the floor screaming, and it was a really, really well done issue. And I think he's going to show up later on as sort of her nemesis. And then in Batgirl 26, which is the first issue of the new creative team, Margaret Scott and Paul Pelletier, Batgirl moves from,
What's the pitch?
It's Batgirl leaves Burnside, which is sort of the San Francisco of Gotham, to Gotham proper, and because she's chasing a villain from that. It was that story that happened in that Batgirl issue I talked about before with all those different stories. And in the course of chasing this guy, her costume gets all fucked up, which allows them to implement the new costume that's coming that was designed by Sean Murphy.
Oh. Does it look like a 70s Camaro?
No.
Should. He's good at that.
He's good at that. He does the cover here, which is really good. So here she's returned to Gotham. Her costume's all fucked up. She goes to the office, her father's office, to get some information. She ends up meeting a cute cop, which always happens. But the one thing that happens here is that she gets tasered right on her spine, and I'd forgotten the fucking implant because they still want to keep Killing Joke in the canon, and so her motor coordination gets all screwed up, and she has an episode at the very end in the office. I just wish they'd let that die, but it's good. I'm looking forward to this team. I was kind of getting sick of every story being about a technology company in Burnside, but
so that's what it was. So it was just high rents and like an expensive coffee.
Scooters everywhere. So
I've only seen two scooters on the streets of San Francisco in my trips there.
Well, they've been banned for a little while.
Yeah.
They just reopened them this week. We'll talk about that later off the show.
Okay.
No one cares. But here's the confusing thing. Nightwing Annual number one sort of continues the story they've been doing in the regular book. So if you haven't been reading, or you have been reading and you didn't read this, you're sort of missing out, which I don't think is a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But here, Otto Schmidt, who did that great work on Green Arrow, is drawing a bitchin' Nightwing with 70s style sideburns. I was all about it. And he's teaming up with Barbara. He flirts with Vicky Vale, who's like, you're much more fun than your older gentleman, because he is. And here it's all about fake news. A villain takes over all the news outlets in Gotham and feeds lies to the populace and drums them up and turns them into angry people. And so he's got to fight that. Luddite Dick Grayson, which is close to my own heart.
Yeah, I can see why that would really speak directly to you. I can understand where you're going with that.
Really good Barbara and Dick stuff there. They're sticking with this idea that they're soulmates. They just haven't figured it out. And doesn't mean he can't make time with Vicky Vale in the meantime, because he's Dick Grayson. He's got 70 sideburns.
Booyah.
And Otto Schmidt's terrific in that he should draw Nightwing.
Well, he could, except all comics got every 2 weeks, so get over it.
He can draw part of Nightwing.
Plus, he did an annual, so that's going to take him out of for at least 2 or 3
months. I'm really sweating. I just want to know. It's a little bit the sideburns. You know, it's a little bit of that, but it's also just no ventilation in this room.
Well, I can't hear it.
No. Well,
I can't hear the sweating. I mean, when that's happening.
Microphone, but it is affecting my ability to think. So just
it's okay. That can only help.
Sure.
I want to quickly talk about Runaways 12. We've had a year of this book. I remember when the first issue came out, you and Ron were still on the show, and both of you were like, screw this.
Off the show?
Huh?
Is this your way of telling me something?
Yeah, you're off the show. I'm bringing on Runaways artist Chris Ferenka. Chris? Oh. 12 issues. Hello. I've really enjoyed this all the way through. I don't actually know that I have a heck of a lot to say about it that I haven't said before.
The story of it, because in the beginning, I don't remember what happened. I was annoyed that they didn't tell you any context, but that's my own bugaboo. What is the story of this book?
Well, basically, they just got the band back together and they put everybody in this big house and they're trying to sort of get back their thing and be a group together. So I think that what you saw was just the let's not spend a lot of time explaining all of the past and just get on with moving forward, which in retrospect is to me a much better way to go. Rainbow Rowell, I think we established she's a YA author, and I think that she's got a really strong handle on most of these characters. She's following up on Victor, who has remained a robot head this entire time. And each of the characters have gone through some things, and she's picked those up and implemented them pretty well. The stuff that the characters went through in Avengers Arena, and then, you know, how Gert wasn't there, so she's technically younger than everybody because she time traveled. And there's some time travel stuff that happens in here, and there's a lot of sort of emotional teen love romance stuff and awkwardness. Mm-hmm. And I think that this probably captures what people really liked about Runaways early on, outside of the plotting and adventure part. I think that it's been the best at the character and personal parts. And then at the same time, like, Chris Anka is just great. He's one of those guys that I think that, you know, long-term hardcore, we'll say inflexible comic book readers will be like, what is this crap? But for me, like, it works 100%. It's just so interesting and so specific to his personality. And then, like, there's just a lot of joy in those pencils. And I really like looking at it. And it's been monthly. It's been consistent. It's been fun. I've liked the different character developments that are going on. It's very melodramatic.
Let me ask you about monthly comics. Are you finding it hard now to keep track of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm finding it very interesting and also disconcerting about how our brains are being rewired now, that you get fire hosed these double ships books. And so now when the books are come out every 4 weeks, I'm like, wait, what happened?
There is that. The other effect to me seems to be that it makes those books feel a little more special. Like, it's almost like they're premium. Like, oh, these are the books they care enough not to try to ram them down our throats as often as possible. So that makes them feel a little special. The other side effect is that I have no idea when something is late anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I have no concept of, like, if it's been 2 months or 1 month or, you know, if something's been, like, 8 months, you know, I'll sort of know, oh, wait, it's been a little while. But really, I don't feel lateness in the way that I used to.
There's no rhyme or reason.
Nope.
All right. Well, those are the books we wanted to talk about this very light fifth week. As I mentioned before, if you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, you can, every patron is allowed to vote on a book to add to the rundown. And this week, Scarlet number one from Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev and Joshua Reed. This is the second Jinx World release in the new DC world. This is a continuation of Scarlet, which was a 10 issue series or 12 issue series 10 years ago came out. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be, I think, two Jinx World books next week. But this was a continuation directly from the story, the previous story, in which a woman named Scarlet, as I recall, her boyfriend was killed by the cops in Portland, and she started a revolution, and that's all I remember.
I didn't remember anything at all. I know that my name was in that first issue.
Was it?
Yep. Me and Suntress, I think, and somebody else, Chris Eliopoulos, put our names like in a newspaper article. Or
something. Oh, that's right.
Like
that. That's right. So this, as I said, the original Scarlet series came out, I believe it was 2008 or something like that. I looked it up earlier. I don't remember what it was.
That long ago, huh?
I probably sweat the details out. And so here, there wasn't really any help. I mean, there was a little recap paragraph.
It didn't help.
But anyone who's come along in the last 10 years is not going to know what's going on or why they care.
Do you remember, like, how long that other one went? Like, I feel like it was abandoned.
I abandoned it.
I feel like it was abandoned in addition to me not reading. I feel like I wouldn't have stopped reading it, though.
I stopped reading it. I didn't, I wasn't into it. And I wasn't really into this one.
Yeah, yeah, I was halfway through it, and I thought, I don't like this.
10 issues that came out in 2010.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I don't know the frequency in which they came out, but it was a 10-issue book that is marked as bi-monthly, which means it came out every other month. Revolution happened, and they are... in Portland, the bridges have been blown up. The other side is, I guess, the government, and they're worried about drones and they're worried about satellites. And Scarlet spends most of the issue talking to us about her, the plight of the revolutionaries. And I mean, I liked looking at it, but
I want to clarify. I don't think it was bad. I didn't like read this and like, ugh, what are they doing? But I really I didn't grab on anything. I don't really care about the main character or understand why she is, how she is, and how that relates to the situation.
It's an odd choice.
It's strange. I get what it's saying. Like, they're revolting against basically the police state, and they've started like war on American soil in this part of the city and blocked everything off around them. And I don't know what it's trying to say. It's very un-Bendis, to be honest.
And it's unfortunate because we're on such a Bendis roll. We're loving Superman stuff. And I really liked, what was the last one we talked about? The last Jinx World book. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't like the art, but I liked the story of Pearl. But this was a kind of a bummer because I was like, I don't think this was a good idea. I think it should have been. I'm not saying you got to go back, but there could have been another way to introduce the information of why we were here. Because, I mean, 8 years is a long time.
Yeah.
So anybody who's a Bendis fan or curious who hasn't read the other series is going to read this and go, what the hell is going on here?
It's pretty interesting that it was done that way. It was just like, this is just for people who already knew. And I was like, you have a new format. You've got heat. You've got whatever. Like, Give us something.
Yeah.
It's weird. I was kind of trying to get into it, and I was like, I don't remember anything about this. And as I went on, I thought, you know, I don't really think that ever series really made an impact on me. And I what I thought was, I don't think it worked. And it's weird that you're revisiting it.
I think he's revisiting everything.
Yeah.
John, it looks like it.
I guess. I mean, they felt really strongly about it. It's fine, but I'm not.
It just wasn't one of my favorites to begin with, and I wasn't necessarily totally surprised that it wasn't one of my favorites to read the new one.
I was kind of excited because I thought, you know what, maybe I had missed something on the other one, or I, you know, I lost track of it, or maybe there was something there, and I'll find something in this that, because usually I do with Bendis, I'll find something I like about it, and it just didn't. It was like a bunch. It was like a mishmash of Bendis-y stuff.
That yeah,
didn't seem to go together.
It just wasn't compelling, and it wasn't clever. I don't know. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. Let's do ratings on Scarlet out of 5. Ratings, 2.
Two and a quarter. Yeah, I'm not giving it a D necessarily, but just bleh.
Sticking with it?
I might read the next one.
Ooh, I'm not going to. I just know I didn't like it before. Just
I know, but I can't tell what the point is, and maybe if I can figure out what the point is. But honestly, it was like Bendis was like, "What if I do a Brian Wood book?" And I'm like, right. "Don't do that. You're not."
It's not right. It's not right.
It wasn't right.
Yeah,
it wasn't right.
All right. So there you go, patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and you can vote on a patron pick. But also, if you give it the $5 or higher level, you can get your own dumb superpower right here live on the show with almost no preparation whatsoever. So let's thank Casey Franz. Casey Franz is a human atomic clock.
Okay.
Which means Casey always innately knows the exact time, no matter where Casey is.
Is that how an atomic clock works?
Well, the atomic clock is like the standard clock. Like, it's the official time.
Oh, okay.
And so Casey always knows the official time down to the second, no matter where Casey is.
Does Casey find that alienates others around her? Because they're like, who gives a shit? Well, you're 5 micrometers off. Yeah, but they're over now. Well, they've just moved forward. We're still 5 micrometers off.
So Casey doesn't need a watch, which is unfortunate because watches are cool, but, you know, doesn't need to look at the phone. Just always knows the exact correct time.
Well, I guess that's, you'll always know how late things are going.
Land on a plane, you know their local time.
Sure, sure.
Does that have to do math in her head?
So, Felicia, well, do we know that Casey is a she?
Oh, I didn't assume that's why I kept calling Casey, because I don't, it could be go either way.
We know a Casey who's a she, which is why, but there are male Caseys.
I know several Caseys who are she's. I know some Caseys who are male.
Yeah, that's true. So we don't know, but I'm guessing that Felicia Franz, of the Friends Ferdinands, not true.
Yeah.
It probably is a she, because Felicia.
Well, we have two Franzes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They know. So one of them is like, that's wrong, or that no, that's right. Felicia puts spots on things.
Puts spots on things.
Yeah, when she touches them, the surface becomes covered with spots.
Like polka dots, or like
yeah,
like disease.
No, not like disease. Like pop art kind of spots. And maybe like, and you know what? It isn't always like, say, concentric. Equal round spots. Maybe sometimes it's like Kirby dots, or sometimes it's, you know, leopards. But if she lays hand on something, it's she controls it. It's not like everything she touches is like, oh no, I turned it to spots. It's a thing she can do. Permanent though.
Permanent. Oh. So she controls the spots, but she also controls, I assume, whether or not spots go on. So it's not like everything is covered in spots.
Yeah,
it's not like King Midas.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's a voluntary thing, but the presentation of those spots, the type of spots, the coloring, that is not voluntary. That's reflexive.
So instead of putting a bird on it, she puts spots on it.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand your reference.
That's Portlandia. We just talked about.
Right,
Portland.
Okay, yep, all right.
Tom Sitch, I think it is. Tom grows heels.
Like wrestling so, villains?
No, like his he can prop his feet up by growing his heels down.
Oh. Sort of like a He-Man character.
Yes. Yes, very much so. He can go up, let's see, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches here.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got like full on, like it's not like he's on his toes. He's got heels that are now 3 or 4 inches bigger, and so he can walk around like that.
Huh.
Like wedges, not like stiletto heels, like wedges.
Not the hero of the rebellion. Sorry.
No, no.
So what?
Yeah, there's little wedges holding him up under his feet.
Now that's a power. You sure you don't want to?
I am going to switch. He's a little tiny wedge until he's holding him up, but just under his the back of his feet.
Look at the size of that. Yeah, yeah, I've heard it.
You say it every time, Wedge.
Sorry.
And then when he's done, Wedge just gets absorbed back into his feet.
What an awful thing for to happen to Wedge.
But yeah. I mean, he doesn't smish him. He just goes back.
Yeah,
into
no, I know. I'm going to get absorbed back in this
guy. That means that most of the time, it's just little wedges inside of him.
Yeah.
No, he's not in his body. He manifests them, but still, yeah, it's still weird. Nightmares. Okay. Nightmares, Tom.
Yeah, that is. That's some specific Star Wars based body horror. Rupesh Shah has the power to transform your social media feed back to when it was enjoyable in 2009. So basically, just goes in there. He can find his way to a special settings section if you give him access to your account. He'll flip a couple of things, and it's just back to friends sharing fun things.
So he has to actually, he does it with settings or just like mind power? Like
no, they're settings, hand? But only he can access them. That's the metahuman aspect of it.
And so he has these secret settings that wipe out all the last however many years of social media.
Yeah, it just goes back to when it was fun.
And is everyone else posts fun stuff, but they don't know they're posting fun stuff?
It filters it for the user.
I see.
In such a way that just keeps it to, it doesn't make up posts, but it removes anything that makes you want to kill yourself.
So basically, if you were to look on, say, Twitter, you would say, wow, no one has posted anything in weeks.
Oh, you would, well, yeah, you just, well, it would be like, oh, cool, here's some awesome art, here's some funny jokes, here are, relevant news stories that are not about awful things.
About cats?
I mean, that's sort of a subjective thing, the cats. But it might be that for you, having a small onslaught of is exactly what you need to do that.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be, I don't have to check it that often because there's not that much stuff going through there. That might be exactly what you need.
He's kind of like drums. Planetary, like he can work the computer in such a way that no one else could do.
Exactly.
All right. Well, there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can.
For example, if he does this to your Facebook page, your mom's not on there anymore.
$5 or higher level, you get your own dumb superpower. We thank everyone who helps us out, including Casey, Felicia, Tom, and Rupesh. And let's do at least one email, maybe okay. Two.
Pick one.
Let's do. Carl C. from Sparks, Nevada. I just reread Jeff Johns and Richard Donner's Last Son of Krypton, and it was pretty clear that saying that Superman and Lois wouldn't be able to conceive children. Flash forward to the New 52, and the next time we see the old continuity Superman is in the Convergence tie-ins issues, and Lois is pregnant and gives birth to Jonathan. Thanks to convoluted DC continuity pre-New 52, Superman is now the regular Superman, with Jonathan as the new Superboy. Did they ever explain how Lois was able to get pregnant?
What a horrible comic that would be.
When a man loves a woman.
When a Kryptonian loves an Earth lady. Very, very much.
A very special handshake goes on.
I struggle with the urge to make base jokes about something like this. Like I had an instinct there to make an alien dick joke. Right. But I feel like A, that's been covered, and B, it makes me roll my eyes because
Kevin Smith did it in 1990.
Yeah, and I don't like anything that has to do with that anymore. So I don't want to do that. What I did think while you were reading Carl's question was this happened, and then this happened, but then this thing, and I kind of remembered all that. And then at the end of it, I thought, yeah, none of it's supposed to make sense. It's supposed to be fucked up and wacky like this, and that's the best part about it. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other one sounds like a downer. I mean, I read that book. I don't remember it. I definitely remember reading it. I don't remember what happened in it. Yeah, these things happen.
Yeah. I mean, they wanted to tell a story. I mean, really, they wanted to tell a story, and it turned out to be a pretty interesting one. Is like, well, Superman is a father figure. How do you do it? At the same time that they were wiping out a different version of a Superman, you know, because they had too many, and sort of realigning continuity. So, you know, who cares is my response, but maybe that just is a thing that, because remember they combined the two versions? Yeah. So that's how.
It just, yeah. I mean, do you remember who drew that Superman book?
No.
The one where he was in the black suit with the beard while the other Superman was running around? He was living in secret?
I don't remember who drew it, no.
Dan Jurgens wrote it. You know who drew it?
No, I just said that.
Lee Weeks.
Lee Weeks? I bet it looked great.
It looked awesome.
Huh.
So yeah, some mystical mumbo jumbo. I mean, look, she got pregnant. The other Superman disappeared. Who knows?
Uh-huh.
Who knows? Maybe he did it.
Was the other Superman, the one who disappeared, that was the jeans and t-shirt one, which we never really got enough of.
And maybe the part of him that could impregnate Lois went in the old Superman. Who knows?
Uh-huh.
Make up your own story.
I bet what happened was every night she would go to sleep and then he would go get some weird Krypton shit and like secretly treat her body. Because that's what Bryan Singer's 2006 Superman would have done. Thank you.
Let's do J's.
Do you want to leave on that, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. JS, I have spent zero time thinking about this. I'm not sure I care about the answer, but nothing matters, right? You got us there. On the last show, you talked about the ages of comics, the Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, and the Modern Age. What happens to these labels as time marches on? I feel like the Golden Silver Ages are set in stone. Does the Bronze Age expand to include whatever is slightly before now, or do we add in the new titles? A Platinum Age? Will we reach a Paisley Age?
I mean, come on, Jay. These are dates. So the Bronze Age ended in 1985. You don't keep expanding it. Why would you do that? It's over. The comics that happened in the Bronze Age do not resemble at all the comics happening now.
Well, a question.
Yeah.
When does the Silver Age end and the Bronze Age begin?
Okay, hold on. Hold on. You. I'm gonna look it up.
Okay, I'm gonna. I'm trying to think. Silver Age would be. So the Golden Age we know 30s through the 50s basically.
Silver Age is 56 to 70.
Okay. That makes sense. 70 is the turning point. So basically, you could roughly say that when you go from Stan Lee to Roy Thomas heading Marvel, that's when we go from Silver Age to Golden Age.
Right.
And you could even say, not quite, but when Kirby goes to DC. So when Kirby's done at Marvel, Silver Age is over. And then who was in charge of DC? So that would have been...
It was Infantino and Giordano, maybe?
Yeah. Infantino was in charge of it in the mid to late 60s, basically? Or through the 70s? I think so. Julie Schwartz was, yeah. Okay.
Golden Age was 38 to 50. So that was 12 years. And then Silver Age was 56 to 70, 14 years.
I wonder what the inciting incident is to switch it from the end of the Silver Age to the Bronze Age.
Let's see, is there a thing that says?
I mean, because basically you've got the Silver Age begins with the Justice League, as I understand it.
So according to Wikipedia, there's no clear moment unlike where, you know, the appearance of Barry Allen, which is the kicks off the Silver Age.
Right.
Historian Will Jacobs suggests the Silver Age ended April 1970 when Julie Schwartz handed over Green Lantern to Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams.
Okay, I can see that.
That might be it.
But that's interesting because that would indicate that it has nothing to do with sort of the Stan and Jack Marvel era.
Yeah, some people suggest it was when Gwen Stacy died in 73. I feel like going from a really Silver Age stalwart to Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams really is a change in ages.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see a lot of changes happen. I mean, the 70s was a different time.
And so then the Bronze Age is 70 to 85, 15 years. And now we're still in the modern age. There hasn't been no new age because
so the basically comics since 80, have not changed. 86.
86 to now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we are in the modern age. There's been a lot of changes during that time, but just as there were a lot of changes in the Silver Age. I mean, if you think about what happened from, say, the Wortham trials to, you know, the end of the 60s, that is a great deal of change and upheaval in comics.
We're in the 33rd year of the modern age.
Yeah.
Unless, I don't know. The movie age starting 2000. I don't know how you'd want to.
I don't know how much that affected the actual comics, though.
It's affecting them now, the way they're written for. But I wouldn't call. I mean, it's still tonally the comics haven't really changed.
Yeah, that's what it is. Like, and the people who are writing comics now are still being influenced primarily by everything from Alan Moore and Frank Miller.
I think it was Jeff Parker in your Talkspot interview this week that said that, didn't he? That everyone's still trying to do Alan Moore.
Oh, sure. I don't think anyone's beating him.
But the point is, like, and people talk about, is Watchmen and Dark Knight that influential? Yes, they're still being emulated 33 years later.
Yeah.
No one has decided, okay, let's do this different thing, and everyone followed them. They're still following Watchmen and Dark Knight, whether people like it or not.
It's like Star Wars.
Right.
Like we never got, like, movies, in a way, never got over sort of Star Wars and Jaws. And they're trying to do that weekend box office, you know, blow everything away with an action movie, and to the point that we're actually focusing on it, you know, and sequels and that kind of franchise building and stuff like that. So
I think if I thought about it a little more, I think you could maybe figure out a new age starting in 2000, but I don't know if that's.
I mean, you could. If I was going to put it anywhere. It's not content based, I don't think, but you know the crash, the industry crash and Marvel bankruptcy, coming back out of it, but still,
the comics still pretty much the same.
Well, not from the 90s. I mean, really, I think when you're talking about from the late 90s to the 2000s, there was a shift, but I think the difference is this: is that the comics are being made for the exact same people.
Yeah.
Who were buying them then.
Yeah.
It's just that they've changed in that the people making them, the people reading them are getting older. And there's a push-pull, but like there's been no audience turnover in that time, I don't feel like. I don't know. It's very interesting. Yeah,
I mean, we're in amber, I think. I mean, maybe the Dark Age, people knock that name around, but I don't think it's any darker now than it was 20 years ago.
No, if it's lighter, I mean, I think there's more room for that anyway now that there wasn't. Yeah. But the thing is, I don't know that those apply because like everything, there is no monoculture anymore. So
in comics, there is
to a certain extent, but there are always sort of smaller micro movements. So if you think about, say, in the 80s, you had the black and white indie movement,
right?
You know, and then in the 2000s, actually through the 90s, there's several indie movements that are sort of distinct from one another, and you know, Image Comics, sort of what it, you know, you could say the Walking Dead era and what that presaged, and that ended up being actually relatively short in terms of its influence on you know, how people were making careers. There's all sorts of different ways to look at it now. We might be in too deep.
The Hollywood age.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know.
All right, so contact@ifanboy.com. That's where you can write in to get on the show. Thanks for your emails. And really quickly, last week when Josh and I were recording, the news broke that Russ Heath died while we were recording, so that's why we didn't mention it. And then just today while we were getting ready to record, Marie Severin died. Also as well, Gary Friedrich died. Gary Friedrich created Ghost Rider. Marie Severin was one of the old school Marvel people, and she also helped co-create Spider-Woman and designed that great costume.
Great costume.
She's a great artist. Really unsung hero of Marvel in the early days. Russ Heath was a giant in the war comics world, a lot of DC stuff, but he was mostly known for his war comics. He was drawing up until just recently. I told a nice story about it on the patron hangout about seeing one of his pieces from a couple of years ago. We still had it. And we don't want to get too far into it because others have been more eloquent, but it's I think the sad part of it, losing three people this in the past 7 days, is that it's, you know, there's not many people left from that era, from that formative 50s, 60s era of comics.
I'm so afraid that, like, we're going to lose those links to it. Because one of my favorite things is, you know, creators who sort of span eras. And, yeah. And I don't want to ever lose that. I don't want comics to change and evolve, but I want that knowledge of the past. I want that connection. I want that, you know, with Ditko, with all, like, yeah. It's all, I mean, not that he was an available resource, mind you.
But. Well, and we talked about a little bit of Hangout about Russ Heath, but it's a reminder that comics really haven't been, as we know them as a thing, haven't been around that long.
No.
They've been around the length of people's lifespans who are still alive. You know, it's
that first San Diego I went to, I stood next to Will Eisner.
Yeah.
You know, and that's you know, beginning of the golden age, that dude.
So it's really interesting. I mean, you think they've been around forever, your whole lifespan, you've been reading your whole time, but they've really only been around the you know, as long as some people have still been alive. And so it's really, it's a reminder of that. It's a reminder that the people who started this thing as we know it now are, you know, much like World War II veterans, are not with us as much, and it's sad, and everyone should appreciate them as they're still around. And if you meet them at shows, you should, even if you don't want to get anything signed, you should just walk up and shake their hand, mm-hmm. and thank them, because then they're not going to be around. I remember seeing Jerry Robinson at shows. We interviewed him on our podcast, but guys like that, he's no longer with us, unfortunately. But guys like that, you know, didn't get their just due in their time, and there are not many of them left.
Yeah. It's true that in the time that we've been doing this show, we're seeing a generation
who
were still around at the beginning that are not going to be.
Well, I've been doing the show almost a generation.
It's true.
My fanboy in general. Oof. All right. So rest in peace, Russ Heath, Maurice Everin, and Gary Friedrich. Now let's plug some things real quick before we get out of here.
As far as I know, Jeff Parker is in perfect health and will be around for a while, so you do not have to worry about him right now. But what you can do is listen to him and I talking on this month's Talksplode. Jeff and I talk about a lot of things, and some of them are involved with comics and some aren't.
A lot of Jaws. A lot of Jaws talk.
Well, that was a thing. I had to get it out of the way.
I have to admit, not as much. I could listen to it right away once I heard there was going to be a lot of Jaws talk. Mm-hmm. And I could have used more Jaws talk, to be honest with you.
There was more. I just didn't record it. And B, there could have been a lot more. I was trying really hard to do.
He also outed you that you hadn't seen it in a while, and I feel like you need to do so.
I know.
Put it on the background while you work.
Okay, I've been right on the. I don't know what the version of it is like. You know, I've just been about to watch this a lot lately, but it's right there. So it's fine. So go check that out. That's in the feed. The next Booksplode is going to be Superman Blue Volume 1. I am about a third of the way into it.
Okay, we'll set that record date soon.
Yes.
It'll come out next month sometime, probably late in the month, because it's a big book.
Mm-hmm. We're already talking about the next book, too.
Yeah, slow down. Everyone slow down. This is episode 649, which means next week is episode 650. And longtime listeners know that on the 50s and the zeros, we do a live all-email show. Live meaning we record with a live stream. We put the show out like normal, but you can come watch us record it. It gets long and sloppy. We're going to be recording September 7th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 p.m. Pacific, with special guest Ryan Haupt. And if you want to get your questions on the show, we still have room for more questions. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Put 650 into the subject line and get those questions in by September 7th at noon, so the day of recording, noon Pacific time is your deadline to get those questions in. Anything after that won't be counted for the show. But if you want to get your questions on the show, you got a paleontologist, you got two grumpy old men.
And to be fair, if you're putting in at noon and Pacific, there's a good chance I'm going to go to bed before we get to your questions, so maybe do it earlier.
Yeah, we tend to put them on the show in the order they come in, so yeah. Get them in early.
I mean, you can get them on the script, I guess, but that's not a guarantee.
That's true. So that'll be fun. Come join us as we do it live. If you can't make it, you can always listen to it that Sunday. But we look forward to seeing you guys then. And also, as we mentioned last time, the next Patreon Hangout, which is our monthly one-hour nonsense hangout, will be September 16th, which is just 2 weeks later, I guess. A week later? Yeah. I don't good at math. A week later, just over a week later. And as advertised, the G.I. Joe Fantasy Draft will be taking place in that show. That's where Josh and Ron and I are going to pick our fantasy G.I. Joe squad. If we had a five-member squad, we had to do a commando raid of some sort. Who would be the best five? And we have a fancy spreadsheet. We're all ready to go.
I already have my first pick. Like, every time you mention it, I have one thing that pops into my head that I'm like, oh, you got to put this guy on the team. And I'm not saying it. And I'm really worried that you're going to choose him before me.
Well, we're going to have a live drawing to figure out the order. And that will decide many things and, you know, what happens, the order of picking. But I'm very excited. And as I mentioned during the Hangout, if you're gonna be watching that and you're a patron, go watch The Toys That Made Us on Netflix, the G.I. Joe episode, because it really is a nice primer on the G.I. Joe IP history, because it's all tied together, the cartoon, the comics at Marvel, and the toy. And it's a good primer. If you've never seen G.I. Joe and know nothing about it, and you're thinking maybe I won't enjoy it, watch that episode. You'll get a good overview of everything. Plus, Larry Hama's in it, and he's real grumpy, and awesome.
I was literally going to say it's worth it just for the Larry Hama.
Yeah, so check that out, and we're really looking forward to the live episode next week. We're really looking forward to the live G.I. Joe Fantasy Draft in 2 weeks, so those are the live events happening.
Yay! And head over to iFanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts. You can comment on this show. You can find those other Talksplodes and Booksplodes we've done. That was the 80th Talksplode.
Crazy.
Yeah, and the run of it has been fairly consistent. So that has been fun. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following at ifanboy on Twitter. You can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram. Honestly, Instagram's probably the safer place to go.
So if you continue to do these Talksplodes every other month, You're looking at 3 1/3 years to get to 100 episodes.
Well, that's true. That is a milestone. That's a long way from me thinking about it.
If you like the show, can you imagine booking 20 more of those shows? Oh, wait a minute. I did the math wrong on that. That's wrong. That's totally wrong. Guys, I can't think.
It's 10 less shows. Than no, it's
20 shows. It's 20 shows because that's 80.
Right.
So it's only a year and change. So you can probably do that.
Yeah.
So start booking them now. If you like the show, write a review on iTunes. Leave a star rating. If you don't want to write a review, it helps people find the podcast. We thank you for doing that.
Connor doesn't like my haphazard booking.
I just know how hard it is, and I feel bad for you. Better than that is to tell your friends about podcasts. Personal recommendations are currency in today's world. And we appreciate everybody who does that, mentions us on social media or to their friends, their comic store owners, their moms, anyone, their parole officer. You know, he's got a commute too.
Or so she.
He or she. They all have to commute. And help us spread the iFanboy love. We really do appreciate it. Until next week with the live show, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Bye-bye. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.